It's Monday, June 19th, and if you're a fan of the In a Little Washington, strap in. We have Devin Rose of Adrift, and Scott and I are emceeing again. Welcome to Eat It, Virginia.
Hello and welcome to Eat It, Virginia, your number one podcast source for food news and interviews with the people who make Virginia restaurants great. Follow us on social media at Eat It Virginia and be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. My name is Scott Wise and I am joined as always by my friend Roby Martin. Roby, I love that you set up these interviews for us with such a passion and a gusto. But if you make me drive over a bridge like I had to drive over to obtain this past interview, I swear to God, I'm quitting the podcast.
Oh, no, you're not. That bridge is awesome. I know it's high, but it's really, really cool.
I white-knuckled it the whole way across.
Oh, you were with your mom. You had precious cargo.
Exactly. That's why it was so nerve-wracking. We left the friendly confines of Richmond, Virginia, and drove east toward the bay.
Right.
And ended up in Whitestone, Virginia, where we found Devin Rose.
Devin and Katie Rose, both of them are there. Very cool to see both of them. I had dinner the night before at Adrift, which is their restaurant. Freaking delicious.
Delicious.
Then the next day, all over them, talking about all sorts of things fun, and you'll hear about their traversing through New York, where he went to school, the In a Little Washington. They essentially lived there with their new son, which is a cool story, and the rest of the upcoming.
And some of the changes that are happening at Adrift,
yeah,
he mentions as well. So we'll get into all of that. I did also want to mention before we branch off to other topics that it was probably, 3 or 4 years ago now that you wrote an article for WTVR.com, shameless plug, in which you declared...
Most people know that as the Channel 6 website, but okay.
You declared Adrift the best little-known restaurant in Virginia, and that story blew up our website for about 72 hours, which taught me a pretty big lesson in headlining. Be declarative in your statements and be, So do you still consider Adrift one of your top restaurants in the state?
If I am going to be anywhere near that area, and by anywhere near, I mean an hour and 30 minutes away, which is where I am right now, yes. It is brilliantly priced. It's brilliantly done. The service was brilliant across the board.
And we get into that declaration a little bit more in the actual podcast. So I guess it was in the fall, you and I emceed an event down at Main Street Station.
Fetch a Cure. Yeah, we did that one with loads of fun restaurants and many Italian sandwiches by Fat Kids, if you remember.
Hundreds of people there in attendance. Roby and I were dressed up.
Thousands of people in attendance.
I'm sorry. Thousands of people in attendance. And I think, there was an auction and Taylor Swift tickets were auctioned off.
Dogs and Italian villas.
Yeah, lots of big things. And Roby handles these things with such grace, and I get very nervous. And so,
Maybe had one too many cocktails and then was not nervous at all. I want to point this out to everyone. Missed a whole line that I had to pick up during the introduction. It's a real good time for Roby, guys.
So, sensing my apprehension on these events, Roby comes to me after
zero
the event and says,
zero sensing.
Sends, this will be the last time I make you do this.
I did not say that.
Well, can I finish?
Yes, but I didn't say that.
Can I finish?
I promise I will ask you next time.
Okay. I remember it as you saying, we never have to do this again.
Declarative.
Fast forward, narrator, we have to do this again. Fast forward several months, and Roby says, hey, we have a great event coming up that I'd like for us to take part in. Fill in the blanks, Roby.
Well, it didn't really... I said, I've called you. I've left you a message. Can you call me back? This is a text message. He calls me back and I said, I think I did it again.
Oops.
Yep. Oops. I think we've got to MC another event. But this one, you're going to like.
I like the first one. It's not the events that I don't like.
I'm trying to sell it. This is my my sales pitch. Anyway, July the 15th, we are emceeing an event for Positive Vibe. If you notice, there's a trend in the events that Scott and I MC for. They're always benefiting a charity. So that's important to me to be philanthropic and I know it's important to Scott. So this one will benefit Positive Vibe Foundation. It has individuals like Jason Alley and the famous pimento cheese, David Guas, who's known for his biscuits in the bakery up towards DC and Maryland. We've got Andre Mack, who is one of the best known black sommeliers and winemakers in the nation. Like, it is a big, big event, and I think it's just going to be real fun. It's at the Faison Center. Huge event, huge people. Y'all should come. Heckle Scott. I really would enjoy it if somebody sat in the front row and threw things at him. That would be amazing.
Oh, man.
I mean, nice things like dollar bills.
Oh, that'd be nice. What do I have to do for said dollar bills?
I don't know. Wear a tux.
All right. So we weren't going to get into this, but Roby just teed it up for me. Gosh, you guys are learning a lot about our relationship.
It's not a real relationship. It's just mostly, please, Scott, will you do this with me?
I get a call. I can't remember if it's a call or a text. It might have been a text. Mm-mm. What's the call?
I called you. Okay. I definitely called you because there's no way I could have
several weeks
this
ago.
Text.
And she says, just quick question. Do you have a tuxedo?
Do you own a tuxedo?
Do you own a tuxedo? There's a black tie event. Or no, do you own a tuxedo? And I wrote back, yes. She said, okay, there's an event this weekend. I'll let you know. All right. That's pretty much what you said. You might have said a couple more things, but that's pretty much what you said.
Literally, what I said, do you own a tux? And you said yes. And I said, well done. And then I said, I might have to have you in your tux on Saturday night. I don't know yet.
Okay. So this is like Wednesday or Thursday before the Saturday. And so, you know, I took my tux to the cleaner. I get it pressed.
He's making me feel badly.
You know, I get my shoes shined up.
Oh,
You know, I tell the kids, I can't be with you this weekend because Roby has a black tie event that I want to attend. All right. So
yeah,
it's Friday afternoon after a stressful, hectic day at work.
A whole week.
It's Friday afternoon.
You were 24 hours a day. You had to walk to work there. I mean, it was hot.
It was snowing, actually. Anyway, I put on my tux. It's 3:30.
Friday morning at 7 a.m. he puts it on to be ready for the event on Saturday night.
I sit down on my couch. Don't want to eat anything because, God forbid, I spill on my tux.
On your newly dry cleaned tux.
Exactly. I sit there from
3:30
p.m. on
hours.
Friday, just waiting for that phone to ding. Just waiting. Friday night comes and goes. Roby must be out like saving children or rescuing cats from trees. Didn't have time to send me a message.
Oh, the old emergency cat on tree thing. Yeah.
I'm going to wait till Saturday morning. Night. So I kind of pass out in my tux on the couch. I wake up the next morning.
Unwrinkled. He barely moved, guys. Barely moved.
I did not receive a single message from Roby Martin the entire weekend.
Not a one.
And
but what you need to remember, ladies, is Scott owns his own tux.
And apparently it's
it's clean
and ready to go. All right. Speaking of clean and ready to go, let's go down to Whitestone, Virginia, talk to Devin Rose about a drift.
So what was it, 2 years ago, Scott? Nope, had to be three. When I came back to Richmond and told you that I think I ate at the best restaurant in Virginia.
You don't say that lightly. Never. And I do remember that. And you said, I want to write an article about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, great. I love when you write articles about it.
Well, let's go full circle. So after I wrote that article, Justin Lowe came out here and he also was like, I think that might be the best restaurant in Virginia. We are currently sitting in what I think is the best restaurant in Virginia with the chef. We're at a drift with Devin Rose. And I am incredibly excited because I feel like this is like, I don't know, serendipitous.
It's lovely to be here, Devin. I'm so happy you offered me a drink when I walked in. After that bridge, I think I need something a little stronger.
It was a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
So let's walk through your history in restaurants. So,
yeah. So basically, I was born and raised in the town we're sitting in. My father ran a couple of restaurants in the area. He's been in the food service business for 30 plus years and kind of followed the footsteps. Fast forward, I guess, from 11 to...
Did you work for him?
Yeah. Well, as like a kid.
Sure.
Yeah. And then as a teenager, and then kind of was seeking some greener pastures, fine dining, and just there was a restaurant in the area that I went to work at after working for my dad, which ended up being right across the street, which didn't settle too well with him at the time.
Is it still open?
No, it closed in 2008, kind of when the economy took a turn. So then from then I took care of my grandfather until he passed, kind of being a caretaker. And then when he passed, there weren't too many options in the area. So I applied to the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park and left. And in the process had our child River, who's 11 now.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like 3 months in and found out he was on the way. So that was exciting news.
So you head to the CIA.
Gives you a good push.
You're like, oh gosh, I've got to get home. Yeah.
River Rose.
Yeah. That's right.
I love that.
Yeah.
So good.
It hits.
He's going to be a rock star.
Yeah, I hope so.
I think he is.
He'll be perfect. There'll be a drift everywhere.
Did Hyde Park, did an intern at Inlet Little Washington under Chef Patrick and the team, and then went back. I was going to stay there, but there was a chef, Stephen Lyons, at the time who was like, you need to go back and extend your education, get your degree so you have something to fall back on if you quit or get fired. So yeah. I was like, great idea. Did that, and after having Riv for like 6 months, when I returned back, Katie and River moved up and we had an apartment up there and just like juggling like three jobs in school doing that. And then I was like,
that doesn't sound stressful at all. I think it sounds pretty easy.
So kind of comes with the territory.
Came to the Inlet Little Washington, did an internship, went back to Hyde Park
took
with all of the family.
Yeah. And got an apartment.
At a restaurant there?
In Rhinebeck. Yeah. Ariel, it was a little bistro, and then the Belvedere Mansion.
Oh, nice.
Which they're both under the same owner, so it was cool to have like two different outlets to play around with while going to school and you know, studying culinary and continuing the education. And then while I was there, I was like, you know, where can we go after this? And New York wasn't really an option. Big cities weren't an option, really. So just with our chemistry. So I was like, you know, we could always go back to the inn if, you know. So I contacted them and set a job, basically interview up based off of my internship experience. And they took us right in and as a family too, which was an amazing experience. The inn didn't just treat us like, you know, employees, like most restaurants. So Katie ended up getting a job in reservations, which was, you know, a great, you know, stepping stone. And, we worked there for about four and a half years. And then we went out to Carmel, California, and I was working under Chef Justin Cogley at Aubergine, which is in La Berge Carmel. So it was another Relais & Chateau property, which
the Aubergine is delicious.
It's incredible.
Yes.
Yeah. Justin's amazing. Chef Ron Mendoza was the pastry chef at the time, and he was incredible to, you know, work under as well.
How long were you there?
Almost 2 years. It was just California kind of ate us alive financially. What we could have, you know, back home compared to, you know, Monterey is big difference. And how I got that job, Chef Patrick took me out with a sous chef to do the inaugural Gourmet Fest.
Oh, wow.
Which was awesome. It was, you know, all-star lineups. You know, it was kind of cool as a young cook to
be around amongst the stars, right?
So that, you know, and then I went back and I was like kind of riding this high of, you know, seeing California for the first time, especially the coast, because born and raised in a coastal town, it kind of, and it's cool because they're like linear, like Whitestone, Virginia and Carmel, California are like
the same equatorial line.
It's kind of cool. So applied for a job out there after, you know, doing the stint at the inn. And then we were trying to figure out, I took a job here and that didn't go so well. In like 6 months, I got canned.
From a job here?
Yeah. Well, in the area. So
in food?
Yeah, food service for sure.
Can I ask where?
No.
You don't want to?
Yeah.
You can ask. I prefer not to. Tell you.
Yeah.
He says no.
It's in all respects, you know. So we were kind of looking for an exit plan and this space became available and I had, you know, had always dreamed of coming home and we did. We were living the dream, coming home, working in food service, you know, raising our son in the town we both grew up in.
Sure.
Can't necessarily say maybe it was Katie's dream, but it's been working out. And so then, yeah, the space became available and we just kind of took a leap. We had like three other cities with jobs lined up that we were going to do. And then we were like, let's just give it a shot, you know,
see what's up.
Yeah. So, and thanks to, you know, you yourself and Justin Lowe, like it, the first year and a half was, pretty wild and amazing. And then, you know, COVID happened and it's kind of survival mode. And now we're coming out of the tail end of it. And now it's like, labor shortages and kind of like just operating on a skeleton crew. Everything's sure. expensive.
I wanted to ask Roby a question real quick. Roby.
Hit me.
So when you wrote that article, I just pulled it up, by the way. It looks like it was written in May of 2019.
Right.
That sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was it about your experience here that prompted you to call it what you called it, the best restaurant in Virginia?
It's just an incredible care and detail to the food. Like I'm always utterly impressed. And I'll walk through that from, I ate dinner at this restaurant last night. And the clam toast, that's just what they're calling it. There's no fancy name. It's just called clam toast, is an exercise in beauty. It's indusia butter, which... Like, okay, I'll walk through the components of this and you tell me why you did it and you'll see why I call it. So the toast itself is, I'll call it over toasted. Bear with me. So it can hold what could be very wet ingredients without falling apart. Yep. So you have the indusia butter, which is essentially, let's call it sausage butter for lack of a better description. Beautiful fat clams. Then a purple cress, which is like this toothsome green.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost herbaceous, but it doesn't hit too herby, so you aren't knocking the clams out of it. And then these gorgeous purple flowers.
Yeah, there are some bachelor buttons off the side of the building, just to kind of California-esque it.
The whole thing is brilliant. And it sounds so simple, but it's not.
No, it's not that simple. The clams get poached in like a nuja gravy or indugia gravy, which is like we were using for this other dish we were using. So right now it's kind of taking some ingredients.
How do you make indugia gravy?
Indugia cream, roux, and then some seasonings and
just plop those clams right in for
and
a
then
couple
some
seconds?
Piquillo peppers, and then just barely, just like kind of poaching them, and then putting them on the toast. It got inspired by the dinner we did with Bo down here from
your buddy.
Yeah.
Big Bo.
Yeah. So he did the snail toast and did some purple cress on it dressed, and it was pretty damn delicious. And then him and his wife came down for a trip and we hung out and made dinner for him. And then I was, you know, putting some stuff together and made some clam toast.
There
and then I was sitting there, we were eating it, and he was like, man, damn, this is delicious. And I was like, well, maybe it'll be on the menu. And next week it was on the menu.
From Bo's mouth to Drip's menu.
Hopefully Bo listens to this, because I think that he needs the bison ribeye on the menu in Richmond. Because Ryan and I split that with a potato fondue and green peppercorn.
Burgundy cream, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just took some green peppercorns, some red wine. Treated it kind of like an apoff, but a little riff on it.
So you mentioned earlier that we are in your hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the folks at home where exactly we are.
We're in Whitestone, Virginia. What used to be a wine and cheese shop, which we're kind of inspiring to kind of bring a little touch of that back in the space that it was originated in. Rode my bike around here. My dad had a restaurant up the street.
What was that called?
It was called The River Crossing.
And what did he prepare for folks?
He had, downstairs was cool. It was like a, you know, white tablecloth dining. Did lots of like seafood linguine and steaks. And upstairs was a bar. So it was like, it was wild. It was like two opposite ends of the spectrum on top of each other.
And what are your memories of that place?
Hanging out there till like, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning,
The bar trying to, or the restaurant?
The bar. And trying to hustle people on the pool table and dancing with teachers on the dance floor. Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, gosh.
Not what every kid got to kind of experience down here. And then, you know, there was a comic book and card shop across the street that I spent a lot of time during the day. So I wasn't driving my dad crazy.
What is the vibe of this town? I've only been here. I've dined here before. After Roby's article came out, I was on the next boat down here.
The vibe, you know, it's historical coastal waterman's town. You know, I was thrived on menhaden and oysters in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and now it's, you know, it's one of the largest menhaden productions on the East Coast, and that's over in Reedville, which is great for the economy here. And then, you know, second homes visiting from whether it's D.C., Northern Virginia, Richmond.
And is your customer base
a lot of it's
locals or vacationers?
No, it's mostly vacationers, second homes, retirees. Yeah, it's the average age pool. It's up there.
Older.
Yeah. Which is, you
immature
know.
Dining.
Yeah, exactly.
If you've been to the Dandelion, you'll see how mature the average customer is, because that is like walking through a older woman's closet. so much. Do you get a lot of people from the Tides?
Yes. Yeah. The Tides is a huge supporter. Okay. They shuttle folks over and pick them up, even if it's a little late. So they've been a huge support in the success of Adrift. And
so I was really surprised last night. Your bar crowd is a bar crowd.
Oh yeah. My wife makes killer cocktails.
I mean, I had a killer cocktail last night, so I would agree.
She's here if you want to talk with her.
I always love talking with her. She was busy last night, racing all around. So were you, but you know, you can see her.
Yeah, it's a tandem break for sure.
How is it working together? I mean, it sounds like you guys have been doing everything together.
It has this. It'll be 12 years in July, and I'm very fortunate and lucky. She's put up with me for that long. It can be stressful at times, and it's, you know, compartmentalizing home and work and work and home. And then having our son in the mix, you know, trying to get him to work. So how can you inspire the youth to work? A little bit here and there. Yeah, sometimes. We just opened up his closet, so now he doesn't want to come in and hang out.
Yeah, because that's where it was.
That's where the shop's going to be, yeah. So
we're sitting in one side of Adrift, which you said is maybe going to be something else. And then
it will be. Yeah. Once we get through the permitting and construction, it's called more by Adrift, more for provisioning, shopping when you come to visit. It's not really a market, food boutique, wine shop, bottle shop, sandwich shop. We'll have some retail dried goods, some fresh grab and go stuff out of the reach in fridge, and wine, lots of wine and libations, some cocktail mixology equipment. That's kind of it. We're going to try to, you know, gather as much of artisan products from Virginia.
Cool.
Yeah. That's kind of like my main focus. Is supporting their craft and showcasing it here with, you know, there's some stuff that we use, like the Crunch Dynasty.
Love it.
Yeah, stuff's incredible.
We
actually just blew through a whole case of it, which we need to get some more.
It's like a chili crisp, but better.
Okay. Yeah, it's like chili crunch, but dried form with some extra deliciousness.
Everything.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. It's good on Greek yogurt, if that's your thing, Scott, maybe.
Nice, that sounds delicious.
Oh, heck yes.
And then some Virginia.
Your menu, all Virginia products?
Mostly. We play around with some higher end stuff from time to time. We do a monthly wine dinner where it allows us to use some higher end product based off the price point, which it allows us to go back to the way we originated. When we originated, we started off with brunch with no ABC license, doing private dinners where we didn't have our ABC license. So people were able to bring in, dispose it the night of, so it didn't jeopardize our application process. And then once we got dinner going, we were strictly doing like a three course, which is really five with, you know, canapes and pre-dessert and bread service. And then five was seven courses. And the sustainability behind that down here was next to none. So after like 3 months of doing that, we decided to roll with an a la carte menu, which was our saving grace. But we were juggling the a la carte menu and the tasting menu at the same time.
Wow.
With a restaurant twice the size of what it is now with tables and chairs. Like we put the banquette up, which now there's a wall due to COVID, so we could have more seatings with a divider.
I'll say it looks different and then, than when I was here last.
Which was an investment. Sure. So once we did that, then we were like, well, maybe we could split the space. You know, in the future, we'll have two real like retail spaces available for commercial real estate if, you know, we want to rent them out. Hopefully that doesn't come too soon.
Let's hope not.
So then we just kind of started rolling with that. Like it was kind of just a snowball effect of what we could do with the other side, downsize, refocus Adrift, open up a new adventure, something more to offer to the town for lunch, which there aren't too many lunch options. So it's more about trying to do more for the community and ourselves at the same time.
We were talking a second ago about the older clientele, and have you had to adjust
experienced clientele.
The mature clientele. Have you had to adjust your original vision, or how have you adjusted your original vision for what you wanted your restaurant to be to
We went from trying to do, you know, Snake River Farm, like ribeyes with, you know, in a tasting format to doing like fried chicken sandwiches and burgers and stuff to keep people coming through the door because they want, you know, affordable cost, you know, on plates, which we did that and we've done it and we've put it on, taken it on and off because sometimes on a Saturday night you'll have a 10 top and they all get burgers. Mm-hmm. Well, that's can't survive unless that's your concept. You know, like you have more tables and chairs with burgers being served.
Right.
So how far into the process did that kind of realization hit you that we're going to have to pivot before
it was like 3 months, 3 months when our reservation counts were like 10 people. Yeah, we were doing a tasting menu, but it wasn't sustainable. So, you know, Katie and I had to make some decisions and it actually worked out better in our favor. And when you dined the first time, I think we were juggling both menus.
You were.
And it was kind of cool because at that point we were serving a chicken sandwich and then like Bichuton grilled mako shark with like a mole sauce. So it was like, it was cool. Like you were kind of
the yin and the yang.
Yeah. Enjoying the beauty of both. And, but then it was just like, this could burn us out quick. And we were doing brunch. So it was like doing that menu, coming back in and doing breakfast service. So we were working like crazy days. So now we just changed our operation, our hours of operation to kind of fit Riv. We're doing Wednesday through Saturday. So now we have Sundays off as a family and Monday and Tuesday to get ready for school and all the important things in life. But I think with doing the shop and then running the restaurant, I think it'll be enough workload for us and hopefully...
In River.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a support system too. So, you know, it's like, yeah, never forget that.
I love it.
Has that kept you in town, the support system that you have? Have you thought about...
Yeah, Katie's folks, I mean, they're like, when it comes for Riv, it's like they are our support system. Like they're the pillars. They take him like two nights a week during school week. And yeah, the support from the town has been great. Yeah, so between the two, it's definitely worth staying.
I think it's great. I'm excited about it. I stayed at Refuel last night.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah. That's actually right down the street from where Katie grew up in Irvington. Oh, yeah.
Cool. And it's pretty affordable.
Uh-huh.
In comparison to maybe another place you might
sure, absolutely.
In that has hope and glory in it or something
right.
Tides. and I like the idea of having somewhere that has a really, really good chef behind it to get like provisions, but not provisions because we're not going to call it that.
Yeah, exactly.
That you could take back to a place like that.
Sure.
So I think that's really...
We're excited.
Around a lot of places. We went to the farm truck market.
Yeah, old farm truck's awesome. Livy's Market's awesome, which is new. So if you haven't been there, yeah, check that out. Highly recommend it. Farm Truck's awesome. They actually do our bread pickup from Sub Rosa every week.
That's and what I was Gene, wondering.
Gene's been amazing.
So Sub Rosa has a bunch of bread at Farm Truck.
Yeah.
And I assumed it was the other way around.
No.
Evan or Evram came here.
I wish. No, but that would be cool.
So growing up here, and if somebody was coming to stay, perhaps at Refuel or other places, what would you tell them to do? Like, give me the local scoop on what their couple of days look like.
See,
and where you eat when you're not eating here.
All right. First day of arrival, I would say, if it's on a weekend, go check out camp in Irvington, where it's like a gathering place where you sit by fire pits and drink some beers and socialize. They have like bands on Fridays and Saturdays.
Relatively new, right?
Yeah, relatively new.
In the old vineyard.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
It's called Camp.
Yeah, they did a killer job.
Are those little tent houses people's houses?
Yeah. Some are houses, and I think some are Airbnbs.
Okay.
Lots of Airbnbs.
Okay.
Everywhere.
That's good.
Yeah, it's good. It makes it a challenge for a workforce down here.
Sure.
That's like one big struggle with just like trying to own a restaurant. It's like, you hire a chef, where do you put him?
Where is he going to live?
Yeah.
You can
stay in my bedroom for like a couple weeks.
And then we got to get you out.
Yeah. Which we're seeking.
Then we have dinner here, right? Friday night.
Oh, yeah. We'd always love to have you for dinner.
So camp for beers and stare at the vines. I wish somebody was taking
care of them. I think they're like taking them out, and I think they have some plans for doing some fun family activities, which would be great.
Yes.
We get some coffee at the local. These are all in Irvington. Grab a pastry from across the street out of the oven. If you're staying for a couple days, grab some stuff from the old farm truck. They're awesome. Or Livy's in Irvington. Or the River Market next door. Jim's been in business and operating. He's a legend to the town of Whitestone. He's wild.
Oh, really?
He's a wild guy. Fun.
What are my extra
Maybe watch a sunset down at kayaking. If you can book a fishing charter. Maybe.
Is there somebody who does good fishing that you?
Oh yeah, out of Reedville, there's we went with him. Sorry, I'm running.
He's
for
getting
names.
Old. We're
I'm running
getting
for no, names right now.
I'm about to ask him what it's like working with Patrick O'Connell because that's a cool thing.
That was awesome.
Let him have it in the back of his head.
Yeah, working for
that's
Chef.
That's long term memory. That's there for
those
a
are
while.
Things you don't forget.
because he's an icon, right? Like,
oh, absolutely.
That guy is incredible. And when you were interning there, do you remember your first couple weeks?
Yeah, we just had River. Katie had River within the first 2 weeks of my internship there, which was amazing experience, but it was intense for her. But we'll move on from there. They were pretty amazing. They actually gave me 2 weeks to just like get settled in and be a dad before I actually started. I worked one or two nights to start my intern. And then they were like, just go ahead and take your 2 weeks that you need. And because there was like a 2 week interim between your internship and going back to school. So I was like, I'll just take it now. So when I went back, I was like, left the inn, back into class the next day pretty much.
Wow.
And yeah, it was wild. But working for Chef, yeah, it was. That was a pretty incredible experience. Internship, first couple weeks. Those were my first couple weeks. Got back to it. They're super welcoming. Staff was super supportive.
How many people
were in that kitchen? With, 20, 22?
Really?
During a dinner service? Mm-hmm. Yeah, between, the chefs working the pass and garmage. I don't know how it is now. They've changed some stuff around. And then, yes, Stephen Lyons was a big inspiration during my time there. He was the executive sous chef at the time. And I think he's working Clyde's now in D.C. But he was the one who just kind of fathered me through like the first couple weeks of being a dad and being a chef, because he was all about that. That's what he did. And then he was one of the reasons I really wanted to go back there. Other than Chef Patrick,
sure.
And some of the talent that was in there at the time, which it was just, the turnover in there was wild at the time. Like it was,
of course,
you get to work with someone and you kind of jive and then all of a sudden they're gone.
Is that because it's an intense job and it's,
Oh no. I think it's just, once you reach a certain point, you're ready. I mean, but turnover in restaurants right now, we all know, is it's shorter than it used to be. And for me, it was like the 4.5 years. Yeah. I took a lot in. And with Katie, we've been kind of going tandem since we've been married and where we've worked, which I think that's why it worked so well here. I think we've built up enough patience, maybe.
I don't know a child that could say I essentially grew up at the Inn at Little Washington. River has a really
An amazing story over there. Yeah, we did like the 60th anniversary of Relais & Chateau dinner, and Dominique Lasseau, widow of Bernard Lasseau, came to, and they used him as like the key to the town. So like they passed the key from him to her from the mayor, which was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. So he was all dressed up in Dalmatians and, you know, got
high standards,
kind of got a young photo shoot, which was, you know,
which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got a picture in the house. That's kind of like one of my favorites.
I bet.
Yeah. You look at it and you're just like, wow. So you come after you, for a while, you can give yourself some self credit, right?
Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't. Yeah, 4 years at the Inn of the Washington, you should pat yourself on the back a ton, because that's pretty. I mean, that's how I found out about you.
Okay.
Evan and Devin, who both worked at the Inn of the
Washington. Oh, sure. Yeah.
They have a little catering business, mm-hmm. where it's actually quite big now, called Gastro Love.
Oh, nice.
And they catered a couple of parties of mine, and were in my kitchen. And they were like, have you been to this restaurant? And I'm what?
Nice.
No, but I'm going to go as soon as I can. And so that's how we ended up here.
That's awesome.
Little
connection.
Washington.
Only the fanciest of the fancy.
Only the bougiest for
me. So we're about 90 minutes from Richmond, 64 East.
You must have driven so slow.
Why?
Because it took us like an hour and 15.
So, all right.
75.
15 minutes difference. Okay. You're right. I drove very
slow.
That
15 minutes is a big deal.
Right.
Traffic.
How far are we from Hampton Roads?
About an hour and a half.
So about the same. Mm-hmm. And then Northern Virginia, do people come down from Northern Virginia?
Oh, yeah. You talk to?
Mm-hmm. Is that?
They're coming down to stay, and then they'll dine with us. Yeah. So it's been awesome.
Do you see people that come down just for dinner and then drive back to Richmond?
We had that at the beginning.
Yeah.
Now I think they're finding places to stay and making it. There's so much to offer now. Virginia tourism's done a huge amount for the Northern Neck. I think we all have a lot to be grateful for down here for that. Back to what to do, a walk at Hewlett Point, which you can look for artifacts and stuff over there, kayaking, fishing charters. There's plenty of them.
Do you fish choose. Still?
I love it. Yeah, I just haven't had as much time. I love the outdoors. It's kind of what was all about my youth, hunting, waterfowl, and fishing. And I guess I could consider myself a third generation waterman, because I did that through my teens when my dad he ended up opening up a crab house after the river crossing. And then while he opened the crab house, he opened up a steakhouse, and then the river crossing closed, and then he decided to close the crab house, and then he closed due to the economy in 2008 too. You know,
did you learn from him in terms of the restaurant business?
Man, he always told me to not get into the restaurant business, and always wanted to be
the same thing. Don't get in the restaurant business.
Yeah, always wanted to be a baseball player when I was a kid. That didn't happen, so I was like, yeah, this is fun. I had the first taste of going out with some cooks after service, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. So I did that, and been doing it ever since.
So he said, don't do it. And then you did it. And that was the big life.
Kind of always do what your parents tell you not to do. Right.
Noted.
I love it. I'm glad that you did it. I mean, obviously you should listen to your parents, but
yes.
River, but I'm glad this happened. Is it true that you have, there was a rumor when I was here during the pandemic, we got a to-go order. We stayed at the Tides and got to-go orders from Adrift like both nights. That was because we had to. Also, I had that sandwich, the fried chicken one. It was really good. I just want to put that out there. But I heard that you have like your own connects for some of your seafood that you won't tell anybody about because they're like yours.
Yeah, there's a couple, but
tell everybody right now.
I need to know right now. But I mean, like,
there's
like
a few in Reedville. There's a guy down Windmill that I kind of keep close. But it's there. Everyone's starting to kind of pick up on that one. We try to solely use local oysters since we're able to pick them up from the farm. And we started off with Whitestone oysters, and we used them for a long time. And then we most recently have been using Steamboat Wharf Oyster Company. And they're new and doing an amazing job. So just kind of spread the love now rather than just kind of, yeah.
Using the same. Now, somebody was sitting next to me on one of the rockers at the tides. We were looking at the water and they're like, where'd you get that from? I said, we ordered to go from Adrift. And they were like, oh yeah, he apparently has the seafood hookup. I was like, do tell.
Yeah.
Do tell.
Word on the street.
You were like, kept it close to the vest, and that's why all your stuff was so good. It was a wild conversation.
Well, it's kind of like the mushroom hunters. You don't want to give away all your secrets,
of
I guess.
Course. And yeah, you don't want everybody to find your morals.
What inspired the art on your arm? What are we looking at here?
Just kind of an homage to my grandfather. He was a waterman, and when he passed away, I was pretty close with him. And yeah, so it was young decisions on getting tattoos, and now sometimes it feels good.
So I know what a waterman is, but explain what a waterman is.
Like, that's when you, a hard
when you say that your grandfather was a waterman, what does that mean to you?
Hard, humble work. You know, it's he was supporting a family of six, whereas I'm supporting a family of one. So that's, you know, hopefully the more fish you catch, the more you can support. I don't ever want to really have any more restaurants than one. So one kid in one restaurant's enough for me. It's like two families in its own.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it teaches you a hard work ethic, and the appreciation for nature and the outdoors and the water and the bay. You see something out there, it's floating, pick it up. Don't throw anything in it, you know, those things. And along with, you know, sustainable catch, pound nets, crab pots to a degree. And we were able to dip net back in the day, which was walking the shorelines with a crab net and dipping crabs and throwing them in a basket.
Dip
netting,
yeah. Is that what it's called?
Uh-huh.
How do you catch the crab, though?
You're using like just a crab net that has a handle on it, and the bigger you go, you can catch flounder. And I don't think you're allowed to do that anymore.
I don't even think
dip netting is legal anymore. I think to catch crabs, you have to have a recreational license, and you're only allowed a certain amount of pots that you can traps.
Really?
Yeah.
But so
yeah.
Back to the waterman
conservation.
Sure.
Yeah,
sense.
Yeah.
He would go out every morning. Have the catching bring catch it back it,
yeah,
to a market
then,
or sell it to restaurants?
Well,
or?
He was coming down on the weekends and staying at his parents' home where I grew up down at Windmill Point, which is a little leg off of Whitestone that goes down to the river. And he had his family in Baltimore, so he would come down on the weekends, do his catches, and haul them back to the Lexington Market in Baltimore.
So that's why
I'm pretty prideful about those
Virginia crab in Baltimore.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
Lots of Virginia crab in Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's actually what the name of the crab species is, Virginicus, but we won't go there, Maryland.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to.
What was your grandfather's name?
Wilbur Rose. Yeah, everybody called him Bud.
Oh, that's so. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about Bud Rose before. You and I did. I don't know.
Possibility.
Yeah.
And then we have some family members. Well, a cousin down the street, Miss Mary Seafood, and we're related through our grandparents, which is kind of cool.
Is that new?
She's been open almost the same amount of time we have been.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I think we opened around the same time. But she's doing something much different and much needed for the community. There really isn't a seafood market around that you can get what you're getting from her. So, and she's doing an amazing job. Yeah.
I looked at the menu earlier of her stuff on the off chance I might want to buy some soft shell crabs.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to go down to the docks, there's Little Bay Seafood, which is someone we get our soft shell crabs from.
Boom.
I'll leak it.
That didn't take very long.
No,
yeah, no.
I got it out of nowhere.
And then still kicking seafood, which is down Windmill Point as well. They're not too far from each other.
Little Bay Seafood.
Yeah, and another thing to do is get an oyster tour if you can in the area. You got Rappahannock across the river, and then Whitestone Oyster does them. And then all these new young farmers, which would be pretty cool to see.
Well, you're having dinner service
tonight,
so we're kind of cutting into his prep time, Scott. So if you've got another question, you need to ask it now.
Can we have a part two podcast like in a couple months or something?
Sure, let's
come
do
back.
It.
I'm coming back.
Too much pressure to put on me.
I know you're gonna have to think about it.
I'm coming back.
Anything else?
I gotta go over that bridge again. I have to get a bourbon or something.
White knuckling it. Well, you're
a
listening.
Katie cocktail.
There it is. The gin. That J-I-N, that is the cocktail.
Yeah.
It is so good.
Just deep breaths over the bridge.
Yep. You're listening to Eat It, Virginia with Devin Rose of Adrift, Roby Martin, and Scott Wise. So now do you want clam toast?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely try the clam toast.
What are you against? Are you against clams?
I don't know if I am or not. That's why I got to try it.
So Bo and I had this conversation the last time I was at Odyssey. How has this guy never had Oysters Rockefeller?
At least he's listening to the podcast. I appreciate that.
He listens and it's wonderful. Also, you've definitely had a clam. You just have never had a clam like this.
I've had fried clams before.
Not the same.
Yeah, like at Shoney's when I was a kid.
Yeah, let's cut that.
I think my parents are trying to pass it off as French fries or something.
Yeah, fishy French fries. There you go. That's perfect. From Shoney's. Wow. Yeah. No, that sounds terrible. Let's talk about something delicious.
I would love to.
There's a snack bar now at Little Nickel.
You know, I saw the headlines for that. Have you? I mean, I'm sure you haven't been yet because it just opened or is just now opening.
It's just. I mean, I think they slipped it in there, right? Which is a cool little thing that Javis is mostly Dean. Who, if you haven't listened to his podcast, you really should. You learn a lot about the creative that goes behind a restaurant. They have opened a restaurant within a restaurant where you can just walk up like you're at the pool to get hot dogs and things at Little Nickel.
Did he explain the reasoning? Other than that it's a lot of fun, is there like a bigger reason behind it?
Not that I'm aware of. It's just like... They're like, here's some frozen cocktails and hot dogs. Come on up.
Are you in the parking lot of Little Nickel? Is that where all this is happening?
So they have a little outdoor area, which is really cute. If you haven't been over to the Forest Hill location, the whole thing is like really like, you know, like palm tree and flamingo-y. Yeah. So they're just adding to that vision with more tropical drinks. It's a great idea for summer. I hope it opens like a pool opens and then closes like the pool closes in the summer, like just to give it like that real feel.
Absolutely.
Also, I heard you were doing a lemonade stand of some sort.
Yeah.
You and me?
You and me and CBS 6? Yeah. So I have a little script I was given to read.
You were given a script?
Yeah. So as you guys might know.
He's so good at scripts, guys.
This podcast is associated with CBS 6, and CBS 6 is presenting the Anthem Lemonade.
Okay. So we don't make the lemonade, but restaurants make lemonade-inspired things?
Let me get to the script, and I'll tell you all about
it. All right, fine.
Celebrating its 23rd year this July, Anthem Lemonade, presented by Richmond Ford, is an annual summertime fundraising event that has raised more than $1.3 million to support Children's Hospital of Richmond at VCU. This year, in addition to lemonade stands hosted in the community, CBS 6 is bringing back the fan favorite Restaurant Challenge. This is for all you restaurant owners, chefs, and restaurant employees.
So any restaurant.
Any restaurant.
Okay.
And this is what's happening. You need to create a lemon-inspired dish or drink to sell anytime between now and July 23rd. If you donate a portion of those proceeds at the end of the event, the business that raises the most funds will win an advertising package from CBS 6 valued at $1,500.
So if you create a lemon-inspired something or other, you could do a cocktail, you could do a grilled lemon dish, you could just slap a piece of lemon on fish and make it good. Bo, we could have lemon oysters Rockefeller for Scott. You could win advertising on Channel 6.
That's what I'm being told.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and we have a link in the show notes that you guys can click on for more information.
Cool. Yeah. And maybe we'll put a little bit over on our Instagram too, so you guys can talk about that. And I'll put it at Call Me Roby, because I think the just creating a lemon inspired dish for some free
advertising
is not the worst thing.
And helping the kids.
And maybe you already have one on your menu.
Ta-da.
Easy peasy
Work
lemon
smarter.
Squeezy.
Oh my gosh. I stepped on that. Do that again.
That was perfect. So perfect. What else is going on? Bagels? What?
Yes, our friends at Richmond BizSense reporting that Roby's favorite bagel shop, Nate's Bagel. Roby's favorite bagel shop, Nate's Bagels.
I'm not going to let you get away with that. Go ahead.
Nate has purchased, I guess Nate and his wife, whose name escapes me at the moment, have purchased a building in Scott's Addition. Now, the article that our friends at Richmond BizSense,
who we love, by the way,
reported, stated that Nate was kind of coy when asked what he was going to do with said building in Scott's Addition. Roby has some ideas about what Nate could do with the new building that he bought in Scott's Addition.
I have real thoughts on this. You probably don't want them, but I will say this one thought. If he does not make or sell bagels out of that location, I will find it equally as stupid as the fact that he doesn't toast his bagels at the original location. But you know what? There is like a whole thing that Kenji Lopez Alt says that a good bagel shouldn't have to be toasted. But waiting in line for 4 hours to get a bagel at Nate's sometimes means that I want my bagel toasted.
There we go. You heard it, Nate. Toast your bagels.
You don't have to. Also, did you see this real quick before we get out of here? Did you see that our friend Carlos is moving over to Hatch?
Opening up a second location.
Yeah.
The Little Rooster.
Yeah, is that cool?
I love it. I love Carlos, his energy and his food, and I wish him all the success in the world over there.
When was the last time you had a TBT El Gallo?
It's been too long.
Well, then I'm just going to leave. We're recording at Scott's house today, which is like a new experience for me, but I can cruise right on over and see Carlos after this is done.
Did you have a best bite we wanted to end the podcast on, a high note?
I have a load of them.
Oh, wait.
I know.
You cannot have a load
one.
Of them. It's called a best bite.
I know. So this is going to sound absolutely wild. No, you know what? Probably it's not. We went to the Roosevelt a couple nights ago, a little bit later in the evening. And if you've not been to the Roosevelt lately, Leah Branch is doing some really incredible stuff out of that kitchen.
Leah, who we're trying to get on the podcast.
And she finally agreed.
Wow.
I know.
You buried this news.
I know, buried the lead. But she finally agreed because I told her we could edit, which she's very, very shy.
So are you.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No. This is a different kind of shy. So she's, I was like, we edit anything you don't like. So we'll edit it right out if you're not feeling it. She sent out a scallop crudo dish that I couldn't even tell you about it. There's like a hot sauce interlaced with these like melty scallop slivers that had like house fennel shaved on top of it. Like insanity. I'd had a cocktail or two. I licked the plate.
Oh my God.
At the bar.
Oh my God.
At Roosevelt.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, there's was that. So that's my best bite.
Yeah. Well, my best bite, it's a little less sophisticated.
I don't know. I licked the plate. I lost sophistication there.
Someone in this household has a new job.
Whoa!
And said job is in the food industry.
What?
And I will protect the person's name and the place where this person works.
No!
But I will say it's a cupcake shop.
Ooh.
And I had the best bite delivered by one of my best children. They brought home boxes of cupcakes
like
after their
boxes?
First day. Yes. I think at the end of the cycle, you know, the cupcakes have to, you can't keep them on the shelf for whatever. And their first day was the last day of said cycle. Anyway.
What kind of cupcake was the best cupcake?
The red velvet, of course, the most popular.
Oh, with the white icing and the pink sprinkles. You guys probably know where we are now.
So if you go to a local cupcake shop and you see someone, if you see a better looking version of me behind the counter, say hello.
I can't wait. I'm going.
This episode of Eat It, Eat It, Virginia? Really? This episode of Eat It, Virginia? No! Oh, God, no.